Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You're scared of things that go boom, boom, boom.
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
Sydney Brier is alive. My name is Eric, and I'm joined today by Michael Kester.
Ah, glad to be here.
I've been repeating that incessantly.
You have?
All afternoon.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Do you get, so you go on stage a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You're in all these bands. Do you still get stage fright?
Every single time, yeah.
Do you get stage fright before our show?
No.
I have chronic double feature stage fright.
I
don't know why.
I don't have any stage fright when we're recording because my biggest issue is that I'm going to do something that looks stupid. I've already acknowledged
right.
that I'll probably say something stupid.
We've added a video component that no one is allowed to see by using FaceTime here.
Right.
I've talked about this before, but I'm just riddled with anxiety. And it's bad, and then it's worse, and then it's fucking terrible, and then you FaceTime me and I pick up and we just start talking and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But in the hours leading up to the show, I'm mortified. This week I asked you about one of the movies or whatever. I asked you about Mean Creek before we came on the show. And you just go, Mean Creek? And I have this fear that we have to talk so much when we do these shows that by the time we get off of, FaceTime, it's just, I worry maybe all the information we didn't quite agree on what films to do next time. I'm pretty sure that is not only agreed upon, but recorded and part of the show. So I don't know why I worry about it. But every week I worry that you just mysteriously, Mean Creek. Okay. American movie? I thought you said American Werewolf in Paris.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I have no idea.
I watched a Serbian film, not American movie.
Right. You watched American movie and you watched Mean Creek.
That's right.
Why did you watch those two movies?
Well, I watched them because those are the two movies that we're going to be doing on today's show. And if you don't like it, you can chapter the fuck over them. And if you do like it, you might chapter over the fact that we're going to spoil them.
Yeah.
To the best of our ability, to the truest form of double feature, we will spoil American movie. If that bothers you, skip right on over to Mean Creek for us to spoil that one just as well.
So you're telling me you think we should do these movies in alphabetical order?
I think if you look back in double feature history, you'll find that every single show has been in alphabetical order. That's a little secret.
People are running to check that right now. Everybody has stopped listening and they're all running to look. We usually do the documentary second. I don't know why, but I wrote down American movie first, and this is the artistry. It's happening right here, right this second. Hashim Shah requested that we do Mean Creek. So I guess we leave the listener one for the second one. But I want to call this not only a listener show, but a listener and frequent email appeasement show.
Okay.
As people have been emailing us to cover American movie every 5 minutes.
Okay.
So we're actually going to talk about it today. The real theme would be the negative consequences of filmmaking, which obviously is one of the best themes we've ever had, and no one will dispute that. So let's start with American movie first.
Okay.
Now, you think American movie is pretty much the story of a guy. That's how you're going to pitch this
yeah.
film.
Okay, so...
Hold on. Let's say something else really
sorry.
Quick.
Yeah?
No. There's actually something I just realized we need to say on the show. This is a real thing. This is a documentary.
Right.
I was watching it with some people who did not believe me. They refused to believe...
Really?
This was a documentary that we were watching. Yeah, but unless it's we're in catfish territory again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless this is a really elaborate elaborate ruse, I suppose. This is, in fact, a documentary. These are real people. Having said that, sorry, please go on.
Well, I mean, I just think that there are so many people all the time who are making movies that to make a documentary about a single one, I think you're really making a documentary about the guy and not the product.
Sure.
The project is basically a recycled thing. Tens of thousands of movies come out a year.
I was just about to make a joke like, oh, this isn't the story of how such and such movie was made, but I actually don't even remember the name
right
of the movie they're making. How unimportant it is.
It's called Northwest, I think.
Well, Northwestern, but that's the thing they want to make.
But they end up making Coven.
Yeah, right. Because of the umlaut. Right, yeah. Okay, yes.
Coven.
I've seen this multiple times, and I don't know the name of the movie that the movie is about.
Yeah, but it's not Coven, because that sounds like oven, and that's silly. You can't get fucked by a coven oven. Of witches.
Damn it. I don't believe you beat me to the joke. Fuck you. So you think if we're making a movie about making a movie, then we're really making a movie about Mark. Otherwise, this has to be the most notable film of all time that we're talking, or, you know, an important film.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't the making of Apocalypse Now.
Right.
It's about a movie nobody's ever heard of.
Sure. And it's about a guy nobody's aware of. I guess it's a little right. bit more geared towards like self-production and the independent filmmaking.
Right.
But when it boils down to it, you don't do testimonials with a guy's family if it's not about the guy.
Sure.
You don't find out that his parents, you know, didn't raise him in a way and he retreated from his family life. That has nothing to do with the independent filmmaking spirit.
Well, you're not going to hear a lot of argument from me. I do think it's about Mark. Although I'm pretty excited. I think I get to blow your mind and let you know that Mark has been on the show before in a different movie.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Cabin Fever 2, he comes in the van to pick up.
Oh, he totally is.
That's
He's the cousin. Mark. He's the cousin.
I thought you'd enjoy that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty great, isn't it? So Mark is a phenomenal character, a phenomenal human being, phenomenal human specimen, I guess. I'm curious to get your take, but I mean, every time I see this, and part of what I think might make people watch the movie and think he's not a real guy is you want so desperately to sort of underestimate him.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make fun of him,
sure.
right? You want to go, this guy has no clue what he's talking about. But when you really look back on the film, he may be one of the only people who knows what he's talking about. He right. does well, actually put a film together.
Sure.
You know?
Well, he puts a few together and we see clips of his early stuff. And when he mentions, you know, being inspired by something like Night of the Living Dead, I think the, I can't remember the name of them, the Bloody Grave movies, 1 through 1,000, but
sure,
they're so clearly well executed
mm-hmm.
in the fashion of Night of the Living Dead. The guy knows what he's doing. He's got,
yeah,
his vision is definitely directed. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, he talks like a film veteran.
Right.
He talks in the language of somebody who doesn't have a single flickering brain cell.
Mm-hmm.
And then he talks about these things at very deep conceptual levels where you know that he understands them through and through.
Sure.
To the point of actually being able to convey the ideas even with this, you know, the kind of language he's using.
I think that the strongest point in the entire film where Mark as a visionary was translated to me, do you recall the scene with the scarecrows where mm-hmm. they're setting, where Mark yeah. is telling Mike to set up the scarecrows?
Definitely.
And Mike just kind of sets him up and then Mark goes, no, one's got to be this way and one's got to be that way. And I remember watching the film and at that point going, come on, dude, it's fucking scarecrows.
Yeah, right.
And then cut to last 15 minutes of the movie when we're watching Coven and we see that kind of establishing shot of the fucking scarecrows. And I'm like, oh, that looks so good.
Yeah.
Wow. That guy saw that way back there.
Yeah.
And here I am going, what a douchebag. Quit bossing your friends around.
Right. Well, yeah, you wanna underestimate him.
Yeah, you do.
You wanna look at him and go, this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Sure.
And you also wanna look at his films and go, they're probably all terrible.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably gonna laugh at him and they're terrible. And I haven't from start to finish watched any of his movies, but from the footage we get, you know, it's nothing that's going to change the landscape of film forever.
Sure.
But it definitely has the look of the things he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
It has that Night of the Living Dead feel. You can see his inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And it would not be the worst movie we've ever watched on double feature.
Right.
Probably by a long shot.
Yeah.
I also think he's got a lot of good ideas just about how to make film. He's writing the Northwestern script at the airport. And hearing him talk about it is funny because of the stuff he's saying, but it's also true. He's talking about there's no distractions. You can't, you know, run around, I think I'm going to make a pizza, you know. This is stuff you get distracted with at home.
Mm-hmm.
You do run around playing Xbox and eating pizzas instead of writing your scripts. And the idea that he's going to come out and just work on it at the airport in his car is a pretty fucking good idea.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that nowadays you'd still have a fucking cell phone that you could play Candy Crush on or whatever the hell you do instead
it's
of
hard.
Writing a masterpiece. But yeah, I think you're dead on. And he has these conceptual plans that I think come through even stronger than his artistic visions.
Right.
He has the Corman-esque ideology of, you know, time is money and do everything on a budget, but, you know, don't forfeit the vision for the budget if you can help it.
Right.
He's also got all these people on board with him that are willing to get their heads smashed into a cabinet over and over and over again.
Sure.
For what I can only imagine is a negligible sum of money.
Oh, if any.
Right.
You know, this might be the local acting group who there aren't a lot of other projects in this town for them to even work on.
There's definitely the local thespian who tries to convince Mark that it's Coven and not Coven. That character is definitely, he is the one who I think is the most on the fence about whether working with Mark is even an endeavor worth pursuing.
Yeah, but he does it.
Sure. Well, that's the thing is I think that, you know, in the outskirts of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, if you're an actor and some guy puts, you know, filming a movie in the college forum,
right,
the local college forum, and you're an actor, you kind of have to go for it, right?
Yeah.
If that is your chosen profession, there are not a lot of movies being made in Milwaukee.
Right.
You live in California. I live in Chicago. We know what it's like to be in a place where they're making a lot of fucking movies.
Yeah.
But it's not the same in Milwaukee.
Sure.
How many, name three movies that were filmed in Milwaukee. I'll give you one, Wayne's World.
American movie? I don't think that counts.
So these actors are basically, they're almost forced to be in these movies for Mark. And I think that that works in his favor because there's not a lot of people like Mike who are just going to be on board with him.
Right.
They don't trust his vision. Even his producer, Uncle Bill, doesn't trust him even a little bit.
Sure.
It's just this latent, it's a dark charisma that Mark has. He's not a likable guy in the most direct sense of the word. He's not likable as much as he's respectable.
I'd call him charismatic.
Sure. But you want so badly for him to realize what he's doing is goofy. You want him to, at some point, come to this self-realization where he checks himself in a mirror and goes, okay, wait, maybe I should just be a father and maybe I should, you know, try to reclaim my stake in my family life. I live in rural Wisconsin.
Right.
What am I even trying? But he never does that. And at the end of the movie, you kind of go, you know what, Mark? Yeah, you're fine. Just you do what you're doing. You got the performance out of Bill. That's something that few directors could ever have stomached.
I love, I'm executive producing director's cut and then seeing Bill, the executive producer in this film. I totally understand what an executive producer does. It's amazing that regardless of the scale or scope of your project, that's an executive producer. So he has the vision and he's definitely got the passion. He's been pouring his entire life into this project.
Mm-hmm.
So I love seeing somebody who, if he worked at, an assembly line, his brother recommends, then you would look at him and go, this guy is a fuck up. He's doing nothing of note with his life and is probably not even the best person working at this factory. But because he's making a film, you would see this guy who is, we'll look at this again in Mean Creek. I joke about the theme, but there's a lot of overlap. We'll look at it in Mean Creek, the idea of a caricature.
Mm-hmm.
That's who Mark is when you see him. He is a fucking cartoon cutout. And then he starts talking about film, and maybe not the first conversation, maybe not the second, But eventually, you start hearing him talk and go, oh, well, this guy does kind of know what he's talking about. If all he did was write his thoughts on paper and email them to you and you never saw him, you would think he's some kind of fucking, you know, 20-year film veteran.
Right. Well, the film American Movie is basically a slew of surprising you with the way people are. It's people surprising you because you've underestimated them. And I mean, it's easy to just look at the Midwest and look at middle America and go, that's a bunch of corn shucking hillbillies that drive tractors to the town, you know, country store.
Right.
And because that's still it's still a view people maintain of the American Midwest. And I know because we've been here. And the entire film just goes, okay, well, here's this filmmaker, this Midwest filmmaker. And at first you kind of go, yeah, that's the stereotypical Midwest filmmaker. No, maybe this guy's actually a visionary.
Yeah.
And then you look at somebody like Mike, who I can't even get my head around what's ever going on in his brain.
Oh, I think Mike is a perfect example of what we always talk about when we don't understand something. The answer is drugs. When you look at Mike and go, how is Mike Mike? What about him? How do you get that way? I don't understand how that kind of person, drugs.
Yeah, but then you kind of see that he's a talented musician.
Yeah.
Also, possibly the best screamer I've ever seen in a film.
We've both done takes of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you say that about Mike because I felt the same way and I thought maybe it was just my complete ignorance of how to make music. Here we are 6 years in and the last piece of music I made is still the theme for Double Feature. So I'm not getting very far in my musical career. But yeah, every time his songs come up, you go, oh, well, so this guy does have some kind of skill. He's not just around, you know, for whatever. So I feel like looking at American Movie, it's a film that's talking about dreams and hope and maybe a little bit of luck. But I don't think that's really the best way to do things. And I feel like if there's any credit we're giving to Mark in our conversations, that he's a really good, you know, project manager. He's a good producer. He's a good organizer of people and getting performances out of people and getting people who have no film experience, getting a bunch of fucking PAs to basically do all the important jobs in your movie.
Like his mother.
Yeah, right.
Or his child.
Trying to see him direct his mother directing him is pretty amazing. I mean, that's all that really needs to be said on that subject.
Sure.
So what I really want to get into is your take on whether he's successful, why his movies aren't bigger. I mean, they could be smaller and that wouldn't surprise me because it's hard to make a fucking big movie. But seeing somebody who is as on top of their stuff as him, if I lived in that town, I would think this guy's going somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he's being held back. You've mentioned the Midwest a couple times. I don't know if you think it's environment or, first of all, do you get the sense that he's being held back?
You know, I don't know if, man, that's a hard question. I don't think he's necessarily being held back by external forces.
Mm-hmm.
I think that his biggest hurdle from an external point of view is his utter lack of support.
Yeah.
Not a single person throughout the course of this film ever once goes, I think he's doing great things and I'm on board with him no matter what he does.
That's true.
The closest is Mike, who is basically just hanging out with his buddy because that's all he's done for the last 20 years.
Right.
But his parents both think he needs to, you know, give it up and buckle down and work at the local factory. And Bill thinks he's a total joke.
Yeah.
The actors are kind of like, you know, this is Mark. And if he's going to pay me, I guess this is what I got to do.
Yeah.
But there's not a single person in the entire film who's on board with him and going, you know, buddy, I think if this is what you need to do, let's get this done because you've got some talent there.
Right.
He's got no support structure. Even financially, he's struggling to make ends meet with his bills.
Right.
At the same time, I think that the biggest thing holding him back internally is exactly that, his inability to divorce his mind from his creative self.
Sure.
You've got to figure there's a point in time with every artist where you have to go, okay, listen, I want to pursue art. You know, I want to pursue whatever I want to,
right.
I want to pursue carving naked women into pine trees. That's
sure.
That is my art. However, that initially is not going to pay my cell phone bill.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I should work at a cafe 5 days a week. Maybe I should get a job, you know, doing fucking bullshit telemarketer stuff.
Right.
Three nights a week.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to support the fact that I still have to live.
Yeah.
And I think that Mark is unable to divorce his creative self from just the fact that he is still a human being, that he has to.
He can't swallow his pride.
Right.
It's a little too extreme in the.
And
I mean, wanting to make something of yourself isn't enough.
Right.
You need to plan and execute and sometimes swallow your pride.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's, you know, it's not something I'm going to.
Advocate.
And, yeah. I mean, really, who?
Yeah.
What kind of, you know, dream is that? Hey, guys, here's my motivational, you know, speaker advice to you. Please swallow your pride and get a job.
Give it up 20 hours a week, you know?
Yeah.
No, fuck right. that. Don't give it up 20 hours a week, but, you know, you need a cell phone if you're going to be anybody who people can get a hold of.
The environment that we're looking at, and it's not just the Midwest. It reminds me actually of Gummo a lot. I think there's
yeah.
a lot of our conversation in Gummo applies to this. But we have this Gummo trailer park life. And that's even the cartoon caricature of a person that we're looking at. We're going, oh yeah, one of those Gummo trailer park people. I think by nature, trailer parks are not full of people with drive. It's full of a lot of dreams. And it's full of a lot of scratch-off lottery tickets. But that is why people live in trailer parks, mm-hmm. not because they chose it and they thought it's cool, but because for whatever reasons, they're held back. I think almost everybody who lives there feels like they're kind of held back a little bit. I don't think I'm saying anything too crazy, although
right.
I'm sure people will disagree with me about that. But you have, I mean, that's a cinematic cliche is, you know, young girl from the trailer park wants to be a Hollywood star, has big dreams, going to move out to Hollywood. And I think that's kind of what Mark is, but he has the talent. And so figuring out what's holding him back, I mean, maybe it is environment. We talked about that in Gummo, how mm-hmm. your environment does kind of hold you back. And even if you're the most awesome guy at the trailer park, you have natural leadership, you know, you have some drive. Those surroundings are nearly impossible to get out of. So what does somebody like this do? I mean, I don't know if you're going to get more impressive than Mark.
Yeah.
But you still live there and you're surrounded by trailer park type problems. And especially when you're making a film, no one person makes a film. I mean, maybe in today's day and age, you can do that. But for the most part, films take hundreds, if not thousands or more
right.
people. Do you move out of Milwaukee? Is that your only option? You can't be
really
a filmmaker in Milwaukee?
I think that with everything, it requires, if you are 100% the best person in your field, that's about
right.
40% of the battle of being successful.
Sure, sure.
Because the other 60% is blind fucking luck. You have to get seen by the right person. You have to be in the right place at the right time. You have to make the right phone call on the right day. You can continue. I mean, if you're the best at the game and you continue being the best at the game, that is a great improvement of odds. But that's why you get so many artistic people who are pursuing just the art as opposed to the success of art.
Sure.
Because to be completely honest, it's a lot easier to be fucking amazing at art than it is to be fucking successful at art.
Yeah.
It's the simple truth of art being subjective and success is entirely objective.
Well, I also
financial
think
success is dictated by your net worth. That is a number that you can measure that's on the internet. And whether or not your art is good, you're by making art, it's better than anybody else who didn't.
Sure. I also think a lot of the problems he has are pre-2000 problems.
Yeah.
Seeing him edit and have to go to, you know, a special room for editing,
mm-hmm.
have to go to an editing facility when you can do that now on your telephone.
Right.
That's a pretty explosive image. mm-hmm. of how much that landscape has changed. And so now you can be a one-man film crew, but also it becomes international. You and I made a Kickstarter video from across the country.
Mm-hmm.
We thought we'd have to actually fly out and meet each other somewhere. But when it came time to make the video, we just said, well, fuck it. You have a camera. I have a camera. I don't know. Send me your footage or something. We'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we made it in a couple of days without really even giving it probably as much time as we should have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something you can do now. So I think today's tools, I mean, I want to say today's tools help out Mark. That's good news for Mark. That makes what could perhaps otherwise be kind of a depressing story, it gives it a little bit of a happy ending that maybe
mm-hmm.
certainly the popularity of the movie has helped him out, but also just the tools make it better every day. Then again, you know, I co-host an internet podcast on its sixth year. Like, I don't know anything about success. Don't ask me. Let's talk about Mean Creek, which thankfully starts with "Don't touch my camera." So I know that these two movies belong back to back. See, they're about filmmaking.
Right. Yeah, clearly. Sure.
I want to talk about Josh Peck's character, George,
uh-huh.
because as much as Mark makes American Movie, for me, George is what Mean Creek is about.
Sure.
Even though he's not in a lot of it because, spoiler, he dies. George is, I mean, so I had said during American Movie that I thought the overlap between these two films really came in how much of a caricature George was meant to be in the beginning.
Right. Sure.
Walk me through sort of your emotional reaction to George throughout this movie.
Okay, so my feelings on George are actually pretty solid throughout the entire film, which I don't know if the film is intending to do, but I hate George from the beginning. I never mm-hmm. like him. I never like him.
So you don't fall for the feel good about George?
No, but you know why? Is because I feel...
Oh, that surprises me.
I feel like I've met George.
These George types.
Did you learn anything
from American Movie?
Let's make this really personal. When I was younger, I was bullied a lot. I was, the nerd. I was the dorky kid that everybody picked on. So
sure.
I don't, when someone's a bully, I think fuck that. I have no apologies for bullying. And I don't think that there's anything that if a person's gonna be a bully. And so we get this idea that maybe George has, he's not firing on all cylinders.
Sure.
There's something wrong with him. He's got some disability mentally that maybe he should get a reprieve.
Okay.
But at the same time, man, it doesn't make him a good person. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. Like, you can't be a bad person and go, I'm only a bad person because my brain's not working right. That doesn't make you a good person. It makes you a bad person. That's still how that works.
Okay. Well, we see him do bad things, but we had talked on the class of 1984.
Sure.
About the great 21st century bully awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And I had proposed an idea that is not originally my own, but that everyone was bullied and no one thinks they were the bully.
Uh-huh.
And you and I haven't talked about that a lot. I don't know how much you subscribe to that idea. I know the contrary to popular belief nature of that idea probably appeals to you, if nothing else. But I do wonder if George isn't maybe, if the bully George isn't kind of a side of all of us.
Sure. I think that there's a lot to be said for George as a character, and I think that while I don't like him, there's definitely a beat throughout the film where I hate him less, but I think that the biggest thing here for me is that when they're talking about getting back at George,
yeah,
the prank for getting back at George is not a very grave one.
Sure.
And so when he does, he hits the kid and now he's the bad guy and we need to get back at him. And so they develop this, make him go home naked prank. And then as everybody kind of comes around and goes, maybe he's not that bad of a guy, I'm still sitting there going, it's not like you're killing him. It's not like you're feeding his dog to an alligator, guys.
Interesting.
You're just playing a prank on him and he still did that thing.
Right.
And he's not remorseful. He's still being a jerk. Every time he's almost a nice guy, he calls somebody a faggot.
Right.
And
yeah, it's hard to love him for too long. And they do make a point. And that's one of the great things I think Mean Creek does is its narrative isn't super obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I see the same arc you do. And surprisingly, I also feel like I don't fall completely into the arc, but in the total opposite direction you do.
Uh-huh.
Where I love George even when he's a fucking prick. I don't know why. I'm just like, oh, poor George. He's probably fat or something. And that kid did touch his camera. And don't touch my camera. I mean, I don't know. I don't know why I think George is great and I feel bad for him when he picks on other people.
Yeah.
I go, well, his father probably beats him. It's fine. But I see the arc you do. Where you're supposed to go, fuck that George guy. And then he comes on the trip and you go, oh, George isn't so bad. The interesting thing that the movie does is it makes George kind of a prick again right before he gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what I expected the movie to do.
Right.
I thought, oh yeah, I see where this is going. And even if it had done that, even if it just goes, he's a really nice guy and now all these kids are kind of jerks.
Sure.
Having everybody vote not to prank George and almost having a happy movie that is half as long as the movie we actually saw, I would have felt okay about that.
Yeah.
I would have also felt okay if he was nice and they just all decided to be jerks. And, you know, even though we do a pretty easy narrative, it makes you sort of consider things about retribution and if, you know, where the morality lies.
Mm-hmm.
But the movie I'm sure it has its own reasons, none that are extremely obvious to me. Decides, well, let's give all these kids a reason to, you know, let's make it a little more gray. Let's make it a little more ambiguous as to how the audience is supposed to feel at this moment.
Right.
It doesn't do the very direct, audience should feel bad that they pushed him in the river. I mean, they kind of should.
Yeah.
But it's not as if the audience is going to go, well, I have no idea why that altercation happened.
Sure.
I can't possibly see, you know.
Right.
Why the fight broke out.
My feelings on the whole point where George ends up in the water is that when they push him into the water, I feel like they're fully justified. He is far gone beyond the line.
Okay.
He has crossed a line. The line was drawn for him. Do not talk about my father.
Yeah.
And he goes for it on purpose, knowing it's going to irritate them and knowing that they plan to play a prank on him.
Sure.
He's walking into this.
Yeah.
They push him into the water. He hits the water. Turns out George can't swim. Okay, kids, prank failed.
Right.
That is the moment where I start to see, okay, well, whether or not I like George, which I don't. I don't at all. I don't like him even a little bit.
Even when he gives him a present,
nothing.
He's so sincere about the present.
I don't like George.
He shows up in the car. He's like, hey, man, I got you a present.
But they do kind of keep entertaining.
Note to self, do not cross Michael Kester.
They do.
We'll forgive you at nothing.
Oh, come on. I wouldn't call the cops.
Do you want to get back into that?
No.
You still sore about that? How fucking long ago was that?
They keep entertaining the question of if you could snap his fingers and he would die immediately.
Right.
And I wouldn't ever do that.
Of course not.
And so as soon as it seems like George is actually put in real danger, not haha fat kid walking home naked danger.
Right.
Actual could drown, maybe he can't swim, definitely panicking. You gotta help him.
Yeah.
You can't, it doesn't matter how much you don't like him. And so as much as I disliked George, the second he starts drowning, I dislike all the other kids a hell of a lot more.
All right. So this is the real key moment. And we can go back and forth, and I'm interested about, you know, why we like George at certain points or don't, or why that's so different.
We don't.
For me and you. But ultimately, I don't think that's the most valuable part.
No, I don't think so either.
The real point of value for me is that I think you and I generally agree about the prank. I mean, I wouldn't pull the prank, but I don't think it's a big deal. This kid was a jerk, and they're going to get back at him. Like, I don't want any part of that, but okay, mm-hmm. You know. There's no need for me as a humanist to intervene.
If it ends up on YouTube, I'd watch it.
Okay, good. That's about a good spot for you. So then they break out into this little fight where they're yelling, which I think is 100% okay. I think people should yell and scream at each other all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If there was no violence and everybody yelled at each other 95% of their days, I think that's a better world to be in. So I might be in a minority on that one, but that is way how I feel about that. So they yell and it gets a little physical. And then during this physical altercation, as you said, he's pushed in the water and he drowns and dies. So there are a lot of moments in here that I'm a little unclear about how I feel. Now, they killed a kid. I mean, kind of accidentally. Well, definitely accidentally.
Definitely really. Accidentally.
What's the thing you were referencing about the conversation we had about calling the police?
Yeah.
Was for River's Edge.
River's Edge, right.
The term, what was the term? Involuntary manslaughter, right?
Uh-huh.
So they're killing, but it's an accident. But they're killing, but it's mm-hmm. an accident. But they're killing.
Sure.
Involuntary manslaughter, that's called. We have a definition for that. So let's back away from that for a second before we get there. They're having an argument and he gets pushed in the water. How do you feel about that decision to come over there and fuck with him like that? To come over and move from the totally okay, we're fighting, it's very loud and very confrontational, to someone is placing their hands on someone else with the intent of, you know, violence, a little violence.
Establishing dominance. Yeah, violence.
Sure. They're making it physical.
I'm scared of that.
Is that where the line's crossed?
For me, yeah. But it's not, that's not where I think that, okay, that's actually a very interesting point. That is the point where I think that as human beings, they are misconducting the conversation.
Okay, sure.
That is,
they're in a very tight space now.
Sure.
I'm inclined to agree with you, but if you're in that spot, I mean, I don't think I've ever really touched somebody like that before.
Sure.
To push them around.
That's what I
mean. Get the argument that heated, but they're literally in a fucking 5x5 boat.
I think
yelling for a real long time.
The second that he pushes George, the argument has been misconducted. The debate is failed. The experiment of settling the problem has been exacerbated and it's dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I want to agree with you, but can you really hold him accountable for
that's,
how long?
That's
okay, so
was,
let's say we're in this boat. You and I are in this boat, right?
Uh-huh.
We're in a similar scenario
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to do everything in my power to get under your skin, which I'm very good at, by the way.
Uh-huh.
This is a
yes,
skill I
that's
possess.
That's true. Yeah, we both do that. Yeah.
I'm going to, fuck you. Fuck you. Yeah, you should talk, buddy. All right, so.
Oh, wait, this is Mean Creek?
I'm going to fucking kill you. All right. So I'm going to try. You're going to try very hard to get under my skin on the show, and I'm going to murder you dead. What was I saying?
And I'm not going to call the cops. I refuse
I just,
to call
I started
the police.
Having these. I started having these murder fantasies about you, and then I forgot what I was talking about. Right. So it doesn't matter which one uh-huh. of us, right? One of us is going to try and get under the other's skin.
Right.
And so let me keep putting this back on you. So I'm going to do everything in my power. And let's say I'm going to do this, you know, ad infinity.
Mm-hmm.
We'll stay in this boat a fucking 1,000 years. I mean, how long do you listen to me screaming at you and hitting, you know, every weak point and everything that, you know, you've ever left yourself exposed or vulnerable or everything emotionally I think I could ever get at you for, any unspoken thing that's ever happened? Fucking digging up things from 20 years ago. I mean, how long do you let me just emotionally and verbally abuse you in a heated scenario, not in a point mm-hmm. where you break down and collapse and wither, but where we're kind of fighting? I mean, at some point, doesn't your body almost kind of take over?
No, that's not an urge I get, because I feel like, honestly, this is me being really transparent now. I feel like I can do way more damage verbally and psychologically than I could ever do
right.
by laying my hands on somebody. I could maybe give somebody a bruise.
Well, hold on though. It's just you and me.
Right.
Yeah, when there's other human beings involved, but you and I think could both say that. So I'd want to say for two people who've had no physical altercations in their life.
Right.
We'd probably do a good job beating each other up.
Yeah.
I mean, were it to come to that, I think we were probably the only two people who could do that and not, it wouldn't just, you
it's,
know,
but it's
be
not
over
an,
in a second.
It's not an urge I get. If I get heated and I get angry, I definitely opt for psychological damage. I will push your brain around.
Sure.
But I'm not going to push you out of the boat.
Yeah.
And furthermore, if, let's say, hypothetically, I slipped and bumped into you and then pushed you out of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
No, fuck that. Let's say I did push you out of the boat for no reason.
Okay. All right.
I'm out of line.
It's hard to even get you this far in a thought experiment, let alone actually on a boat.
I'm out of line.
Uh-huh.
You're not in the right. You get what
I... So I'm going to tell you something very, very revealing here.
Okay.
That I'm actually kind of embarrassed about, but I don't know why it's happened. And
did
so
you push a fat kid out of a boat?
Well, I'm watching this movie, and until I saw the movie, totally agree with you, 100%. I've never had that reaction. But as I'm watching the movie and George is being a prick, I'm like, fuck that kid, push him out of the boat. And I've never thought that before. My brain doesn't operate that way. I've never had a gut instinct to like, all right, fuck this, time to get physical. That's never happened to me. I don't think that way. It's not in line with my character.
Yeah.
I just don't. It would never occur to me until I was watching Mean Creek. And it actually worked. The getting under under my skin. I was like, fuck it. Get him out of the boat. Yeah. It's just water, Michael. It's going to be fine. Just push him in.
I don't want you to feel like you're on your own there. Because when he pushes George, I'm not sitting there going, I was like, yeah, fuck that kid.
Shouldn't have done it.
Fuck that kid. Push that kid out of the boat. But now that doesn't make him right.
Okay.
When you see, it's kind of like when you see a criminal and Cops, say, you know, the show, that television show.
I'm aware.
And a Samaritan, fucking stops the criminal and then kicks him in the gut once they're on the ground.
Sure.
You don't sit there and go, hey, Samaritan, that might have been out of line. You're
crossing a line there.
Kick that guy in the fucking stomach.
Right.
You shouldn't have taken the purse in the first place. But at the same time, that's not okay.
How do you think you react if that were to really happen in front of you?
No.
It's not cinema.
I don't think I'd be okay with it.
Really?
It's the same. I don't know, man. I've never had it happen, but.
I don't know. I'm just asking.
It's the difference between wrestling and fighting.
Yeah.
There's one thing where in WWE, you watch somebody throw a table at a fucking 10-foot tall guy's face.
Yeah.
Who just said something mean about, I don't know, terrorism.
Yeah.
Not mean about terrorism, but he says something.
Yes, I get what you're saying.
And you go, yeah, hit that guy with a table. But in real life, I wouldn't want you to hit anybody with a table.
Yeah.
Not to say that I don't enjoy seeing it happen. I play video games. That's why films exist, is to let us experiment with pushing the fat kid out of the boat without ever having to push the fat kid out of the boat.
Can I quote you on that? That's going. Someone please write that down somewhere where it looks prolific, please. All right. So, I mean, I'm okay with the line. I don't actually feel bad that I urged them to push George out of the boat. But I would, because I know, were I in an actual boat, I probably wouldn't have done that.
Mm-mm.
Although, and again, just being transparent with you, it scared me that I had that reaction, because I usually don't, even in movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I spiraled into this kind of madness where I was just going, what if I was in that boat and I had secretly urged him to push him off? And then I'm kind of at fault too. And there's this line of, these kids, how much at fault are they?
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess that's the next part of the question too, is he dies.
Mm-hmm.
Is that on them?
Yep, totally on them. Not because they pushed him out of the boat, man. It's because they didn't go in when he started drowning.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if ever there was a point where that's difficult to do, it's right after you had a fight like that.
Mm-hmm.
To switch from, I am fucking mad at you, the question they talk about in the film, in their heads, they're all going, fuck you, I wish I could wish you dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then he falls in and they're like, oh, he's drowning. No, I'm mad at him. I don't want it. They're giving him the cold shoulder while he's fucking drowning.
Yeah.
And you can't. You have to, in a split instant, go, whoop, we're not mad anymore. Now I'm saving your life.
Yeah.
And I think the way in which he's, his life is in danger also brings some gray area into it. Mean Creek has a lot of gray area. I'm very happy about that.
Oh, yeah.
I love
that. It's really, really effective that way.
So you kind of go, well, they don't really know he's drowning. And then they kind of do. And then they stop being mad at the point where they fully realize he's drowning. And then he's dead a second after that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can definitely see why a bunch of people who I would at least consider honest people, good people, found themselves in a position where they let someone die.
The film definitely does do a really good job of painting the portrait of this situation happening where you're not sure definitively where anything stands.
Right.
Because even so, what I was saying before about, you know, pushing people around psychologically, if someone were to be a total dick to me, you hypothetically, and then I were to push you out of the boat, again, hypothetically, and you were to start drowning, I would immediately save you because I know that that's a victory for me. That you were a total dick, and then I saved your life anyway.
Right.
And
right.
You have to go the rest of your life knowing that you were a total dick, and I still saved your life.
Right.
But George, sure. George isn't the type of person that's going to register that truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Because of whatever disabilities he may have, or just because of the type of person he is, you're going to save his life. You're going to, you know, do CPR, mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. He's going to wake up and he's going to call you a faggot for kissing him.
Yeah, right.
There's no victory. You don't get to save him. And he's not going to wake up and go, man, I was really out of line. I'm sorry. Thanks for saving my life.
That doesn't change the fact you should try and save him. It right. just makes it that much harder for you to jump in the water.
Exactly.
This is a very difficult thing that's implied that they should do. And none of them, you know, have the strength for it.
They've basically created a situation where your only incentive to save George is that you shouldn't, that human beings should be alive. That is your sole incentive.
Yeah, right.
Is that human beings deserve to live. You have no other incentive. You're not going to get candy. You're not going to get money. You're not going to get thanks. Your other friends aren't going to be really proud of you. The rest of the town right. isn't going to be happy. Your sole incentive is because it's the right thing to do. And that's really difficult.
You know, going and saving his life is not only not a bonus to you, not a kudos, but you're probably still going to kind of get in trouble for pushing him in and nearly killing him.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of get beyond that. And I think the, you know, the thing that makes me really happy about this movie is once those decisions are behind you, once you have let a kid die, you pretty much did the way wrong thing. Granted that it was very hard and a lot of people could find themselves in that situation. I think Mean Creek is a very identifiable movie where people go, wow, fuck, I need to be careful. That could have happened to me. In the end, they decide not to keep the secret. They decide to, I mean, do the real fucking hard thing and tell his parents, which I'm not even sure really is the most right thing to do. But in the emotional story arc is the fucking hardest thing and therefore, you know, cinematically the right thing to do. Except for Marty, who robs a gas station with his brother's gun, thusly involving his brother in this conundrum, and then becomes a fugitive. So fuck Marty. But I like seeing that they talked it out, and I like seeing that they decided not to keep the secret. I also like that the film really plays with the weight of the secret.
Mm-hmm.
We love that great expression about three men can keep a secret if two of them are dead.
Right.
I mean, people cannot fucking keep secrets.
Mm-hmm.
It's a timeline of when it's going to come out, not if, when. Removing outliers, no one has ever kept a fucking secret ever in the history of data. But especially a group this large, it's so next to impossible to keep a secret. And then the first thing they do is they run home and go, well, we've got to tell two more people. It's already spreading. It's spreading fucking exponentially. And so they wait till Marty's out of the room and then they do the hard thing. They get together and go, you know what? We didn't do the hard thing last time. Let's do the hard thing this time.
Right.
And I feel at least a little bit better, I guess, about that.
Yeah.
Certainly doesn't bring George back from the dead, but a little bit better.
Maybe in Coven 2.
Flynn Ironstag, Maxwell Harley, Meta Somerville, and Hannah Hughes are the executive producers of this show. I'd make a joke about Bill and executive production, but as you know, you don't joke about executive production. You just don't do it. We got a website, doublefeatureshow.com, and the email address is doublefeatureshow@gmail.com. And we got two movies coming up next time.
Yeah, we do. Next time is Journey Adventure. I don't know which one we're calling it.
The last one okay. is what we're calling it.
That will be our universal monster paired with classic sci-fi that puts Lon Chaney's Wolfman up against Charlton Heston's Soylent Green. That's not his character's name, but...
But it could be.
Big spoilers on that one, so if you don't...
Already. Whoops.
Watch more fucking film.
Bye.